The Man in Line. Daily interaction, debate and exchange of ideas. Broadcast on Manx Radio from midday till 1, Monday to Friday. Manx Radio.
My good afternoon. Here we are, the calm before the storm. Free TT tonight at the lounge. And TT gets underway on Monday. So a big deep breath and off we go. I've got an open line on Man in Line through till 1 today. Next Tuesday with Gary Cobb and Chris Thomas, MHK, talking about the airport today. But anything you want to talk about today, by all means, do get in touch. First of all, I just want to start with something that happened last night in Ramsey, and it was a public meeting of the Electoral Commission today. And if you're saying, Andy, what on earth is the Electoral Commission? I guarantee you're in the majority. Manx Radio's Christian Jones was there last night. How many of the public there last night, Christian?
There was only one member of the public who was an actual member of the public. The other people that were there was the Treasury Minister, and we also had a Ramsey Commissioner and someone from the AG's office.
Okay, so Dr. Allenson was there. Joe McGuinness, I think, the Commissioner,
that was the one.
Who was there. And this was a publicly advertised meeting.
Yeah, it was a disappointing turnout. It did become even worse after that only member of public did leave after about 10 minutes of listening to the panel. It turned into more of a press briefing, to be honest, and it was suggested that it wasn't advertised well. One of the points to raise was that the advert was too vague. Dr. Allenson suggested that there needed to be more bite to the advert, whatever that means. I did ask whether the turnout last night was indication of a lack of appetite from the public to talk elections, but that did seem to stump them and they weren't quite sure what to say to that.
So what was the purpose of the Electoral Commission, public, what were they there to do?
So they were there to look at a number of issues, including accessibility, constituency boundaries, and making elections as fair and equal as possible. So the things that they're looking at are disabilities, postal voting, and expanding being able to vote at any polling station, not just the one in your own constituency. I think that was trialled in Douglas South, the last general election. They're also looking at online voting. They mentioned Australia, France, and Estonia, who use that system, but there have been concerns in the past about security and the potential for election fraud and rigging. It's worth noting that Estonia's latest election, a hacker actually brought a case to their Supreme Court after saying he'd built a virus that could change people's votes without them knowing. I mean, that was dismissed, but as we know, cyber threats are very real, so that's something the Commission will need to be mindful of.
It can't be gauged as anything like a success if only one member of the public was there.
They did say that they're hoping as the meetings go on, there's several that go on around the island in due course, they're hoping by the end of it there will be a good turnout, and they did say that they will return to Ramsey if need be. But yeah, one member of public, probably not the best.
What about engagement with younger voters?
So they did mention that. They said only 40% of 16 to 18-year-olds actually vote. Something that they want to encourage more people to get involved in. But I mean, as we know, the UK, the House of Commons, it's a very fiery place, and young people are on social media. We see posts from political parties on Instagram, things like that. They're kind of a very, very dramatised. But we know the House of Keys is usually very civil. It's almost unheard of for any drama to occur. So I did question whether a lack of flair and almost spice could be something that's making people uninterested.
And what about constituency borders? How did that come up?
So the constituency borders, as we've heard in the news today, they're based on voter population of a specific area, and then they average out all of the population of those constituencies, and each one is allowed plus 15% maximum. But the census revealed that some of the constituencies, Peel and Glenfaber and also Ramsey, have got higher than that. But it's a kind of catch-22 there, because the Commission said that the Isle of Man is very community-focused, so pushing some people into a different constituency currency for the purposes of elections? Will they feel alienated when people are voting for nominees that they know, they might see in the streets and they have had a chance to speak to, but if that's taken away from them and they're given two different political members, are they going to want to vote?
Well, we'll see what happens. But with the election just over a couple of years ago, a couple of years away now, I mean, there possibly are some 14-year-olds who will be able to vote in that election. So it's important that they engage with younger people and make politics accessible.
Definitely. And as we know, the government's economic strategy, they're trying to bring 15,000 more people here. If constituency borders are being used, factored in with population, then they say they want to future-proof the way elections work. But it would seem that they're going to have a never-ending uphill battle if that's going to continue being the case.
OK. Do they venture to suggest when the next public meeting of the Electoral Commission is?
Yes, I think the next one is in Douglas. I think it's on the 13th of June.
Okay, thanks for that. Good to hear from you. Thanks, Christian.
Thanks, Andy.
All right, 12 minutes past 12 on Manx Radio. That's the Electoral Commission public meeting last night in Ramsey. I just wonder who that member of the public was. To the phones now, Mark's with us. Hi, Mark.
Hello, and Andy, how you doing, fella?
Good, thanks.
Good. Listen, you know, with this, we've got a pretty a government that doesn't seem to know what it's doing from one day to the next. Now, they've come up with this scheme with, at the start of it, sounds like a good idea. But when you look at it, you realise that it is actually possibly one of the most pointless and stupid ideas anybody could come up with. And that's this going into schools and talking about suicide prevention. The thing about suicide prevention is it doesn't work. You cannot, literally cannot, stop somebody that wants to take their life from taking their life. What they seem to be lumping this suicide prevention in with is they seem to be lumping it in with, you know, the going around to schools and talking about sexual health and talking about sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, things like that you can do something about. You cannot at any point stop somebody from killing themselves if they want to. So why are we paying civil servants vast amounts of money to go around to schools and come up with some stupid idea about, well, if you do this or you do that, you might not want to kill yourself? Suicide is a mental illness. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it. So what is the point of it?
Well, between, I think it was 2006 and 2021, 156 people took their own lives on the Isle of Man. So, Mark, something needs to happen.
Something needs to happen, but if you... The last statistic that I saw, and I'm going back 10 years now, is that per head of population, and this is per head of population, not by country or anything, but by head of population, we were the second most prone suicide country in the world after Finland. Now, with all due respect, I know a couple of Finnish people, and they're lovely, lovely people, but they have 4 months of darkness a year and 2 months of broad daylight a year. They've got excuses to feel depressed and down. We haven't over here. What the problem is over here is we've got no mental health facilities. That's the problem. If we had mental health facilities, you know, somewhere where you could go because you're feeling depressed or you're feeling down and you need to talk to somebody, that would take a lot of pressure off people who just want to end it all. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Andy. I suffer from depression. I've suffered from depression all my life. There's been times where I wanted to just say, do you know what? I'm fed up. I'm just sick to death of this world. It's a horrible world we're living in. I don't want to be around anymore. But I've got family and friends who love me and I love, and I'm not going to let them be upset and heartbroken and pick up the pieces because of my selfishness. And that's what it is. If somebody is determined to do themselves away, then no amount of talking, counselling, or going into schools and talking about it will stop them. So what is the point of it?
Is it the right thing to go into schools?
No, absolutely not. The kids today, Andy, have got so much on their plates with social media, and they've got history and maths and science subjects and stuff. Then they've got to worry about the 30 grand that they're going to come out of university, you know, sidled with. They've got all that to worry about without somebody going into schools and saying, right, boys and girls, how many of you feel depressed? Right, how many of you feel like taking your own life? No. They've got enough on their plates, Andy. There is absolutely no need at all for anybody to do that. Schools nowadays have counsellors. If a kid, whether they're, what, 10, 11, 15, if they're feeling down or they're being bullied, there are counsellors to go and see. Why is the Isle of Man government employing people to do this? And they're not going to be cheap, Andy. They're not going to be 25 grand a year. They're going to be at least 60, 70 grand a year to go around schools talking to people and, with all due respect, stating the obvious, that suicide is not a good thing and suicide hurts others around you. I've said it. There you go. I'm not being paid to say it, but I've said it. And that's what these people are going to go around the schools and say. But they're getting paid a hell of a lot more than me.
OK. Just let me go back to what you said, because I find it rather disturbing. You said if somebody's determined to take their own life, they will. Are you saying suicide isn't preventable?
Yeah, I am. That's exactly what I'm saying. There's people out there. There are people out there who it's so bad with their lives that they cannot see any way out of it whatsoever. And whether they have a loving family or whether they're single and they don't have any family, they get to the stage where it's so much for them. There's so much burden on them. There is so much angst in their life that they're going to do it irrespective of what anybody says to them.
OK, Mark, I appreciate you. That wasn't a very happy call, but I'm glad you called today, Mark.
No problem, my friend. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks for that. Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. Commenting on what Mark said. There are 61 research papers and also what happened in Greenland a few years ago where they had a very high incidence of depression and suicide, and they actually turned that around very quickly. Vitamin D supplementation.
Oh, crikey, not vitamin D again.
Yeah. No, it's the places that have the worst of it tend to be the ones where you have an inhibition of being able to get it from the sun, either through, even in some hot countries they have problems because, you know, their religion means that they have to cover so they don't get the sun even though they're in a sunny place. But they had like a 93% reduction in depression in Greenland because, of course, they used to get their vitamin D from whaling and you know, eating things that they're not allowed to do now. So they started eating Western food, but they never get the sun. So the depression has been spiraling. But when they were supplemented with vitamin D, it all went away.
So is there vitamin D in whale meat?
Well, from the bones. Because it's locked up in the inside the bones, you see. That's where we used to get it from. Because, you know, if we look back at what we used to eat a long time ago, there's a lot of stews where everyone used to put the bones in. So that's how you get through the winter living up at our latitude. But
that wasn't why you called, was it?
No. by the way, the TT0 thing, we're talking, that was one other thing I was going to mention just quickly.
Yeah.
Another reason that I possibly think, this is just my opinion, and as a biker, TT0 is a bit boring. It might be just a simple reason that, you know, we like the noise, we like the speed. You like that visceral sound as they go past you.
I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, when TT0 was on, it was notable, it was very singular, but you didn't get the thump in the stomach as they went by you. So weren't they talking about putting a noisemaker on the bikes?
Well, yeah, but, you know, people know that, don't they? So, you know, it's not the same. I mean, I've been stood at Gorsley, or I've been up at Ramsey at the Square, or Solby Strait, and when that came on, a couple went past, and everyone just went in for a beer or a coffee, really.
You were at Gorsley?
Oh, it's one of my favourite places.
How do you survive the midges at Gorsley?
Oh, well, it's all right. Just go to the excellent little stand they have there with all the teas and coffees and homemade cakes and everything. It's a wonderful place. I love it there.
Anyway, what were you going to talk about?
Well, I was looking at the specifications of the Electroliner double-decker electric bus that's currently being trialled here, which is made by Wright Brothers, Bus Company, spelt the same with a W. Now, the local news has indicated that this bus has a 200-mile range, which would suggest the larger of the two battery options that you can get for it. That battery is about the same size as 7 Nissan Leafs, by the way. And it is capable of being recharged in 3 hours using what is described as a supercharger. That will produce about 150 kilowatts when it's plugged in, which is about 21 of those street chargers that you see outside Tower House. So about 21 times the draw of one of those. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, if you tried to charge this electric bus with one of those, it would take 65 hours to charge it from flat. So it's quite a long time. And that charger that this new bus would use at the faster one is about three times more powerful than the one that's at the sea terminal, which is, the most powerful one on the island at the moment. So a recharge of that bus will be the same electricity as 45 houses use in a day. So that's 45 houses, full, you know, what you would average use in a house in a day.
And have they got one of these at the bus station?
Right, I think they've only got a 7 kilowatt hour. So I think what they're doing is they're doing short trips and then they're just bunging it back on charge. But it wouldn't be the same as having it on a service duty where it's out all day. And this Electroliner is going to have about a third of the range of a diesel bus, which will no doubt make it a lot more frequent. And depending on what the electricity charge is, I was trying to get a feel for it. Unless they've got some special charge down at the bus station, the price of the electricity, it looks to me like it would be around about 150, 156 pounds of electricity per recharge based on that huge amount of electricity it's going to need. But at a third of the range, that could actually be a little bit more expensive than filling the diesel bus, I think. It's something like about 485 quid for a diesel bus and 530 odd quid or whatever it was for, in comparison, if you wanted to do the same amount of miles.
Right. Do you think they're going to... this is presumably a pointer to the future. We're going to get these things.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, you see, when you try and charge them fast, which is what you're going to need to keep the frequency of the buses out, most of these electric vehicles can only do two of the super fast charges a day to avoid heat damage on the battery. Now, another thing that's interesting is in Japan, they've been recently looking at electric bus routes and how the topography of the hills affects the battery life. And what they were finding was if you've got a 1 in 12, which is not that steep, about an 8% hill, you're using up four times more electricity out of the battery than you do on the flat.
Right.
And it gets exponentially worse from about a 1 in 25 or a 4% hill.
And what's the gooseneck, I wonder?
Well, San Francisco has not been able to use e-buses on a lot of its routes, especially around the Fillmore District, which if you've been to San Francisco, you'll know that area. It's quite steep around there. But if you look at the Isle of Man, if you look at Broadway, that goes up from just above sea level to 230 feet, say, at St. Ninian's High School in only a mile. And then you go up, say, to Birch Hill Crescent. That's at 500 feet, and that's about 300 feet up. In altitude from Onken, and that's only an 0.8 mile. So Avondale Road around there, that's quite steep. And then you've got other routes like Bray Hill, Bucks Road. You're going to be putting quite a lot of gradient drag on the bus.
So presumably that's what this test is for. Presumably they'd put it on the hilly routes to find out where the pinch points are.
Yeah, but of course, at the moment, it's in their favour because air temperature is another big factor. But if you look outside at the moment, it's right nicely within the realms of what the bus battery is okay with, 15, 17, 20 degrees. But you've also got the factor in the wintertime. Not only will the colder air affect the battery, but also you've got to get the passenger cabin heated up for people. So that's going to be another drain on the battery. And then you've got the driving style of the individual driver. Some drivers put their foot down a bit more than others. And the regenerative braking, you tend to get a bit of a charge back when you come back down the hills.
Yeah.
But they reckon a 1 in 12 hill in the area, you won't get it back. So an 8% gradient in the area, which I think a lot of the hills around Douglas are a lot more than 1 in 12, you never recover what you've used going up the hill on the way back, if you see what I mean.
Because I thought they put back in what they took out.
No, it depends on how much you're using up in the first place. I think that's why, I think Chris Thomas alluded to the fact that the eCitaro they had earlier wasn't suited to quite a few of the routes, even up to Ramsey.
Okay.
And I just wonder how the MUA is going to cope with a fleet of these things. If each one's using up 45 houses worth a day per charge, and you know you're going to need, and they're a third of the range. I mean, how many of these things are you going to need to, you know, to keep people on buses if you're going to keep up just with what we're using now?
Well,
you
Chris know, Thomas is in on Tuesday, so I'll put that to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Think about.
Got a dash, Julian. Thanks for calling today.
Cheers.
Have a good weekend. 27 minutes past 12. David's with us now. Hi, David.
Hi, Randy. Just talking the other day about the green initiatives.
Yeah.
And the only thing that came out of the panel that was there was the guy that said they were going to have training for individuals on the islands.
Yeah.
For students or apprentices. Now, the other, I'd love to see the report when it comes out to find out what, how much money they've dipped in to prevent flooding in different areas and how much we've got left. The other issue would be is, where are they going to put the training centre when they got rid of the one for gas and oil?
Well, I think he said, didn't he? Dave Sowden said they'd been over. They were looking at the square footage that they needed. Obviously, they're looking for a building to do this. But the fact that they're doing it in Jersey, he said they've got trainers. They're training people, tradespeople to do it, but they're training the trainers there as well. So they're well ahead of us.
Yes, and that's the issue. Where are we? We're having this thing put on us, and when is it, the back end of September or whatever, you'll not be able to put a fuel-efficient boiler in, gas, electric, solid fuel, biofuel, or whatever. They're going to prevent you in planning, which the law hasn't been changed yet. But you see all the planning applications, if you look at some of them, there's a warning in the planning application now, or the notes to say that you will not be allowed certain equipment, which to me sounds, you know, you're putting really a draconian message out to the population. And just quickly on about the elections and stuff like that and the commission, that's appalling, having one person that came there to have a look. But I remember when they did the issue to do with Onken and then Lakeside, Groudle Road and all out there in the majestic way, they just half the population for the national election. But on the local election, they're all included. So I hope when they're having the one in Douglas, it's not just me or somebody else just listening.
Well,
okay.
But the point, David, is that, you know, if any place should be able to engage the electorate, it's the Isle of Man. Everybody knows the politicians.
Yes. The only trouble is, I think, on the score of things to do, you know, is it number 10, politics?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it comes way below what's for dinner tonight and what am I doing this weekend. I mean, it is important overall.
Yeah. Well, you look at the local authority elections, I still think they can't get a commissioner for Kirkmichael. I may be wrong, and Vivian will come on. But it's just a shame that when, even at local level, you can push things for your community. That's the best way forward when you want to get something done. The national stuff, I think, is stuck in a rut. I think the tires are deflated and we're not getting anywhere. But anyway, I may be proved wrong at the next election.
All right. Have a good weekend, David.
See you, boy.
Cheers now. It's 12:30 on Manx Radio. A note in from Texter 768 says, I think religious fervour has muddled some people's thinking. The bishop is appointed to run the church, not the country. This is Joni Farragher's pitch to get the bishop excluded from Tynwald. And this texter says, the bishop's absence in Tynwald will not lead to the collapse of Tynwald Day, as his presence and input to the political part of the ceremony isn't required. He should not be waiting in the church to do his job of conducting the traditional ceremony. MHKs, religious or not, are elected by the people, and hopefully they should leave any zealous religious views at the door. That's the words of Texter 768. Nobody's suggesting that religion should be removed from the Isle of Man. The bishop is not elected, so why should the leader of one religious group get special treatment? Atheists attend church for weddings and funerals out of respect for the people involved in the Tynwald ceremonies, no different. different unless anyone thinks they should be barred. And as for the national anthem, says Texter 768, it's an old-fashioned song written in different times when everyone was expected to be God-fearing. We should comfortably replace the word gods with something else. Thank you for that, Texter 768. And Dodsey's with us now. Hi, Dodsey.
Hello, mate. Yeah, I just want to touch on the topic of suicide and whatnot. I mean, I suffer from depression and anxiety, although you wouldn't have thought about it, but it's one of those things, I'm afraid. But yeah, suicide and the prevention of it, I think it should be looked after in schools, or indirectly, because they should have something like a student, a counsellor to hand, not necessarily a teacher, or have a counsellor on hand so that if a pupil or student wants to speak about any no issues that they have, or even if they're in like secondary schools or even college, because I remember when I was in college, they had somebody who was...
You've disappeared, Dodgy. I think your mobile phone signal's gone, so give us a call back. Well, oh, are you there again? Your mobile phone signal's wavering around, Dodsy, so we'll try and get you back. A note in from 776 says, Andy, today medicine and science can enable us to live longer, healthier lives through preventative care and advice if we follow it. So we shouldn't sneer or denigrate or disparage public health officials simply trying to do their job. As a child 60 years ago, I'd be turfed out to play on a Saturday morning and not be expected back in until tea time. So I got plenty of fun, exercise, sunshine and vitamin D. Nowadays, a child would likely be on the internet in their bedroom all day. No exercise, no sunshine, no vitamin D at all. So taking a vitamin supplement or stepping outside won't kill you, says Texter 776. I just want to bring up something that you maybe have forgotten. The 4th of June is the end of the statutory consultation process on the plans for those three gigantic wind farms in the Irish Sea. Wind farms Morgan and Mona are being deployed under a joint venture between BP and EnBW, the German company, and the slightly smaller farms being planned by Cobra and Flotation Energy. So just be aware, the statutory consultation process wraps up on the 4th of June. Simon's got some more detail.
The plans have caused concern among commercial shipping companies and some environmentalists. Soon after the proposals were first mooted, Steam Packet Managing Director Brian Thompson warned that if the Mona and Morgan wind farms were developed in the areas proposed, there would be consequences.
Oh yeah, it'll affect us massively. We'll have to reroute our vessels to go around them or go through them, and it has potential for our supply lines, either adding extra time to the journey.
Addressing the consultation input to date, Burkhard Romhild, Project Director for EnBW, said they appreciated the constructive feedback from stakeholders. Taking this on board, he committed to further fine-tuning the project designs.
Noted. Thank you, Simon. So it's next June the 4th, next week. Great to see them repairing the footpath on Groundhall Road, says Frank. I noticed they've compressed the gravel stones, as they should have done this job years ago. But it didn't get a top coat of asphalt as it was overgrown. I just hope they get it right this time, says Frank. Have you looked at Groundhall Road? It looks lovely.
The Ginger Hall has it all. Whether you want a relaxing pub with a superb drink selection, fantastic food from the Manx Country Kitchen to eat in or take away, including bar baskets from 5 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and Sunday roasts from noon, to great live music, even event space, then you'll find it at the iconic Ginger Hall Hotel. For all the latest news, events and more, including Manx Country Kitchen's tasty menus, check out the Ginger Hall on social media. The Ginger Hall really does have it all.
It's good to talk. It's how we get things done. So when you apply for a personal loan from Black Horse, you'll get support from one of our relationship managers who's there to talk you through your application. You could borrow up to £50,000 with up to 7 years to pay it back, and you could receive your money within 24 hours of approval. Ready to talk? Go to blackhorseoffshore.co.uk to request a call back today. Finance subject to status. Applicants must be 18 or over.
Island Hearing Limited, your local hearing care specialist since 2009, with branches in Port Erin and Ramsey. We provide the very latest hearing aid technology available, which you can try at home, with excellent aftercare and a wax removal service available using microsuction. Give us a ring on 830 722 or visit Island Hearing at 1 Station Road, Port Erin. We're happy to help. Island Hearing, always listening.
Ellen Van Infuels promotes road safety and would like to thank their customers for their understanding about restricted access and deliveries on and around the TT course during this year's festival. Safety first with Ellen Van Infuels.
Who's the king? Work it out and you could win an amazing prize from the King Spa in Onchan. From Monday to Friday, we're celebrating the King Spa's fifth birthday in style with some great prizes to be won. Check out the image on manxradio.com and fill in the competition entry form to get into the draw. Then be listening at 5pm on Friday to see if you're our weekly winner. Don't miss your chance to be treated like royalty. Who's the king? Every weekday with the King Spa Onchan and your nation station, Manx Radio.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
23 minutes before one. And Dodsey's... We found you, Dodsey.
Yeah, I'm just out on the braid. That's why the signal's a bit poor out here. But go on.
Carry on.
Yeah, I just want to touch on the suicide and prevention of it, if possible. Because, I suffer from depression and anxiety, although, you know, I come across as quite a happy, jovial bloke on the surface of it and all. But it's not always down to, you know, being depressed. It can be a chemical imbalance. But the other side of it is, particularly in younger, I'd say males, because, you know, there's more males that commit suicide than there is females. Not that I want to say that, you know, females don't get depressed, because they do. And, students in particular, before they go into, higher education, such as the college and such, they should have not necessarily just a teacher to talk to, but they should have a counsellor at the school so that they can, you know, be completely away from a teacher that's going to be face-to-face all the time. Or if they were going to have a counsellor in school, you know, change the counsellor each time unless a student says that they want to speak to that one particular counsellor regarding, depression, anxiety and or suicide.
Just answer me this, Dodsey. Do you think by sending a counsellor into school, you're highlighting a problem or you're perhaps doing more damage than not talking about it by actually mentioning the word? I mean, suicide is a horrible word. It's awful connotations. By taking that word into school, are you making the problem worse?
Well, no. I mean, I have a small... I wouldn't... When it was... one of your callers was on there, it sounded like he was saying that he was... The teacher was approaching the entire class. Now, the entire class probably won't have any of these symptoms, depression, anxiety, or whatever, or any thoughts of suicide, but there might be that one person that's in the classroom that says, right, I want to go and speak to someone, you know, on the quiet. Not necessarily the teacher, but wants to speak to someone away from that and say, look, I've got issues, or, you know, I want to speak to someone one-to-one and, you know, can we deal with it that way rather than speak to it publicly in a classroom? Because if a young adolescent or even someone going into higher education, into the university college, you know, they always had someone there at the college when I was there to talk about any issues. I mean, I didn't necessarily have any mental issues back then. It was only when, you know, I got my own house and slightly before I had my kids did I have my breakdown. But beside that, you know, there's got to be someone there to talk to, that you can talk to one-to-one, that knows your story and that you can relate with them, or you can even just have a nice conversation with them. And if they do talk about suicide, I mean, not everyone will go down the road of suicide and take their own life, but some people will only get to the planning stage, and then maybe go from there. But I mean, I've been in the planning stage before, but I've never gone any further, and I have been to Manan and Court to talk about the issues that I have.
So, Dodsey, I mean, tell me to get knotted if you want to, but how do you approach it these days? When you start going down that dark tunnel or you see it approaching, what do you do?
Well, there is a crisis line you can ring. I don't have it to hand, but you can ring crisis team, and they'll call you in to Manan and Court, and they've got specialists there that will speak to you on one-to-one basis.
Right.
They usually have two folks with you to discuss what's possible. But it depends on your circumstances. I mean, everyone is different. And there are medicines out there that will help you. I mean, my particular medicine is Vendavax, and I've been taking that for nearly 3 years, maybe 4 years. And mostly that is a chemical balance. But I'm saying that if you do go down this dark tunnel of, you know, thinking of suicide, or, you know, if you are needing someone to talk to, then, yeah, please reach out.
Okay. Thanks, Dante. I appreciate your call.
All right.
Good to hear from you. Viv said, look, Andy, as an ex-Samaritan from the UK, I'm now too old. people who commit suicide aren't selfish. And Viv said that was an abhorrent comment. Well, it was Mark's opinion. So that's your opinion about Mark's opinion. These people have exhausted all avenues and can't see past their feelings, have no way out, so I don't think people are selfish where this is concerned. The mental health system on the Isle of Man isn't sufficient due to government living in the dark ages and not admitting that issues are so desperate. I don't think we'll be talking about that today. It is an issue and it is a problem. There is a strategy. The government's got this suicide prevention strategy for the next 5 years called Saving Lives, Ending Suicide. It's a document from Public Health and sets out a vision to make the Isle of Man a place where suicide is a thing of the past. Between 2006 and 2021, 156 people took their own lives on the Isle of Man. So it is a problem, and it's one of those issues that affects all stratas of society, from the extremely well-heeled to the people living on the breadline. That particular black dog, the black cloud, is everywhere and can strike at any time. But thanks for your calls today. Anything you want to add on this, text, email, call or WhatsApp.
Ramsey Garden
if you're an excellent team player with the ability to work with paid and volunteer staff and love to be hands-on, St John Ambulance is recruiting for a commercial training manager. The successful candidate will work closely with the customer, St John trainers and students, and will plan the training calendar, manage trainer allocation and deliver courses when required. If you have a recognised trainer and assessor qualification and would like more information, including a full job description, then email ceo@sja.org.im.
Every day over the bank holidays, and with being three times larger than last year, it is well worth a visit. New choices for indoor and out. Visit Ramsey Garden Centre on Albert Road or check out our Facebook.
Cancer Research UK's Relay for Life is back. Don't miss your chance to honour everyone who's been affected by cancer and the progress made in research. Unite with family and friends, set your team fundraising goal and join a celebration of community fundraising. Search Relay for Life Isle of Man and enter for free today. The Relay for Life, 26th August at the National Sports Centre. Your chance to help beat cancer.
TT 2023 is almost here, and once again Manx Radio will bring you every moment of the action with the best biking station in the world. How does this sound? Senior TT winner.
Sounds absolutely epic, doesn't it?
Practice and race commentary, great music along with the latest news, travel and weather updates.
And as well as all the action around the TT mountain course, we'll bring you the pre-TT practice and race sessions at the Balaun Circuit. You can listen online at manxradio.com and our smartphone app on AM 1368.
And for the first time this year on Crystal Clear DAB Plus in Douglas, Onken and the Central Valley.
It all starts with our pre-TT coverage this evening at 6 o'clock.
The best biking station in the world. The Man in Line with Andy Witt.
Andy Witt, the nation's station, Manx Radio.
Oh, the long one. It's 14 minutes before one. Thank you, Sue. The half of your message disappeared. She said, as for the national anthem, it's an old-fashioned song written in different times when everyone was expected to be God-fearing. Other words could comfortably replace the word God, for example, this earth or our earth. But I guess changing it doesn't seem worth the hassle, as you can't please everybody. God's earth is just an old-fashioned expression for many of us. Thank you, Sue. Looking at the new MV Manxman, it's 24,161 gross tonnage. Ben McCree, it's as much as the Ben McCree and the Arrow together, says Gavin. Well, she's a hefty vessel, certainly a lot wider and a lot stubbier nose than the Ben McCree has. But we'll see what happens when she comes here. Guarantee she'll probably get lots of criticism. Do you remember it's 25 years ago that Ben McCree arrived and everybody said, what on earth is that? Mike's with us. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Andy. Just touching on the electric buses.
Yeah.
If we're going to be fair about this, we need to trial JCB's hydrogen-powered vehicles. I know for a fact they've got lorries and excavators, etc., running very efficiently on hydrogen. I don't know whether they've got a bus actually yet. I think they have. But the big problem with hydrogen is there's a lot of people against it because it doesn't fit their agendas because they've sunk so much money into the electric. There's got to be plants to produce it. They did have a hydrogen refilling plant at the Swindon, outside the Swindon Honda Works.
So tell me, what hydrogen vehicles does JCB have?
Excavators, the old-fashioned tractor with the digger at the front and the arm at the back for digging out trenches. It's got lorries running on hydrogen. Some years ago, the London Police Force had some electric cars and they got rid of them for hydrogen-powered Toyotas because they could refill them as quick as you can refill a car.
Crikey. But the issue always is, I mean, hydrogen's awfully explosive, Mike. How do they mitigate that?
Well, as I mentioned yesterday, there was a hydrogen-powered bike for the first TTXGP, and that was the reason they banned it, was the danger. I ride a bike. I'm sat on top of super unleaded fuel, right on top of the engine. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I believe that there is very little more risk with a hydrogen than petrol.
Well, we'll see. I mean, if JCB, J.C. Bamford, are putting together a hydrogen bus, that will be very, very big news.
Well, so I know that their lorries are running around the country. Their own delivery lorries in England, and say they've got the actual site equipment running instead of yellow, they're green, painted green.
All right, Mike, thanks for that. Good to hear from you.
Okay, can I just touch on the suicide bit?
Oh, by all means, yes, please do.
Okay, I'm in my 60s now. When I was in my early 20s, I was wrongly diagnosed with narcolepsy. And basically, they put me on amphetamines. I was a legalised junkie. And they never really took any notice of the side effects. And I ended up writing a note, taking a kitchen knife, and disappearing. Went out the back door, got in the car, went off, and I bottled it. Believe me, it takes a lot to push yourself over to that. So it's not selfish, but it is selfish. If you were of a reasonable mind, it is selfish because are we going to put your loved ones through? I mean, I know people who've discovered their father who's blown his brains out in bed. It's not. That is the selfish side of it. I worked in British Rail. There was a specialised crew when the 125 train first came out. the suicides learned that if they jumped off a bridge in front of that, they just obliterated, and there was a special crew paid to clean the vehicles. That is the selfish side of it, because several of the drivers had serious mental problems themselves when somebody landed on their windscreen at 125 mile an hour.
Mike, how did you turn things around?
They took me off the amphetamines very, very quickly. And basically family. Because I was thought to have narcolepsy, which I don't know if you know, is the opposite of insomnia.
Yes, it's where people, you appear to fall asleep all the time.
Yes, yes. And it can be instant. Laughter is a trigger if you're a full narcoleptic. They discovered some more tests. I had to go to Wimbledon instead of Swindon, and then they found out that no, I didn't have narcolepsy, I just slept a lot. And nowadays I would have been diagnosed with ME, but this is what I'm talking about, 1983, when it wasn't recognised. And I've just accepted it all my life that I need sleep and I'm tired, etc., etc. But they never really addressed the depression side of it, apart from very quickly taking them off them because they realised they'd mucked up. I mean, I was under the clinic, which is like the halfway house, but I ended up in Devizes, full-on old-fashioned mental institution for a week until they found me a bed, and I've seen some things in there that you wouldn't want to see.
Yeah.
but no, family basically got me out of that, and so we all know that I like to sleep. As I've got older, I don't actually need as much sleep as I used to have. But people do need access to be able to talk to somebody. I didn't have that.
Okay. Mike, we appreciate your call, and thanks for giving us your story today.
Okay, no worries.
7 minutes to one on Man in Line today. The benefits of children playing and their physical and mental health well documented, yet the government seemingly has no interest in play, says Texter 945. The area plan for the East and the draft area plan for the North and West show huge underprovision of play space in every local authority, yet the government has made no proposals to meet the deficiency for play areas for children. Tommy's with us now. Hi, Tommy.
Oh, hi, Andy. Talking about this mental health. I mean, I was put under the, and I'm glad me did through me great niece. I was put under the elder person's mental health care, Andy. You know, they're stationed at Ballacameen Road at the back of the old hospital. And when you get into that procedure, Andy, it's absolutely fantastic. They're wonderful people, Andy. You go through a stage. There's a woman used to come and sit. We'd have a talk in the morning and that. We'd have a laugh and that. And somebody would come in the afternoon. And gradually, I didn't need those. And now I'm free of the whole lot now, Andy. It's absolutely fantastic. And I had to take a memory test finally, and I broke the record, Andy. I got 91 out of 100.
Tommy, can you remember how bad it was at the worst?
Oh, it's bad, Andy. I mean, you feel ashamed of telling people, but I'd ask people not to do that, because there's always help out there, you know, if you're the same as me. I still have a little nervous disposition, but everything else is gone, Andy, you know, and I'd ask anybody, if they feel a bit reticent about taking that road, don't ask to see somebody, and if they go down the road that I went, you know, it's absolutely fantastic service you get, Andy.
Okay, all right. Thanks for calling today, Tommy. Have a good weekend now.
Yeah, and you, mate. And you, mate.
All right, thanks. Manannan Court, by the way, if you need to get in touch. Manannan Court, the crisis team number is 642-860. 642-860. The reason the bishop's in Tynwald is because we're a Christian country and he's the leader of the church. These people who object to the bishop being there should be aware of what they wish for. This what's the story? Joni Farragher, MHK, Douglas East, wants to get rid of the bishop from Tynwald. And give a shout out to our young farmers and their mental health issues all year round. I hope there's support services for them if they need it. We've talked about that many times. Being a farmer, being the agricultural industry, can be one of the loneliest. It's very cold and it's very lonely out in those tractors in the middle of November. And we'll see. Let's just remember that tonight the big story starts at the Belown Circuit. And of course on Manx Radio, you can hear absolutely everything on AM 1368. Chris Kinley's going to be there. Tim Glover's going to be there. Rob Pritchard will be there at Belown right across the weekend. Then on Monday, the Mountain Circuit comes into its own for the next fortnight. All the action. Got to go to manxradio.com. You can find out more about that. Lots of things we didn't get to today, by the way, including this whole story of Maryland and why the TV series that was set on the Isle of Man was actually shot in Ireland. What happened to that? And what's happened to our TV and cinema industry? Do you remember it? Used to make about 20 films a year at one time. So, Tuesday, Gary Cobb, Airport Director, Chris Thomas, DOI Minister, is with us. You going to join us? Thanks to Chris on the phones today.
W-I-N.